This is Safe in Our Arms. I'm Crystal Sirakis. The technology and tools that we use every day are getting smarter. Think of self-driving cars and appliances that are connected to the internet. Well, soon personalized guns may be a way to prevent deaths. I'm joined by Stephen Tarrant. He's founding director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research at Johns Hopkins University. Professor Tarrant, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
There are a few different technologies that can make guns smart or childproof. It's probably too much to detail all of them, but could you give us a couple of examples of the technology that exists today?
Yes, the technologies fall into one of two areas. One is called biometric technology, and that looks at something that's particular about an individual, like a fingerprint. That's the most common biometric technology that's being used. The other is called RFID technology, and that stands for radio frequency identification. And the way that RFID technology works is that the person who's authorized to use the gun has on him or her, it could be a wristwatch, a bracelet, a ring, a pin, and that electronically communicates with the gun. The gun picks up that signal that's being transmitted to it, and something moves in the gun that had been blocking the firing mechanism. It moves, so now the gun is operable. But if someone took the gun from you, then the gun wouldn't be operable because it wouldn't be close enough to that RFID transmitter.
And biometrics, is that like a fingerprint or palm scan?
Yes, it's principally a fingerprint. There are other types of biometrics that can be used and have been tried. The gun can be programmed so that it accepts more than one fingerprint. So if you and your spouse want to be able to use the gun, you can have two fingerprints. If you're a police department and you want 30 police people to be able to use that same gun, it can be programmed for 30 fingerprints.
Now, we all know that technology doesn't always work the way that we want it to. So if you're in a self-defense situation and you have a gun that operates in one of these ways and there's a lag time between the time that you pick up the gun and it's unlocked to fire, could that mean the difference between life and death?
Well, first we should clarify something. When we're talking about these guns, we shouldn't be giving the impression that these guns are out there on the market now. They're not yet on the market. They're about to come on the market, but it's not that you can go out and buy one. When they do come on the market, the time lag will be measured in milliseconds. So no, that doesn't pose any threat to the person who wants to use the gun.
When will they be available on the market?
One manufacturer says that they're going to be available probably sometime in the next few months. That manufacturer is called Armatix. Some people pronounce it Armatix. Other manufacturers are preparing their guns to be ready for manufacture, but they're not quite there yet. They're lagging behind a little bit.
So what is the advantage of owning a smart gun over a traditional gun?
Every year there are some tragic deaths where a young child finds a gun in the house. Maybe the young child doesn't even perceive the difference between a real gun and a toy gun. The young child points the gun at a sibling or a playmate, pulls the trigger, and oftentimes a life is taken. So you can make the gun childproof by making it a smart gun or a personalized gun. I use both those terms interchangeably, smart gun and personalized gun. Another category of lives that would be saved are some suicides. Most people don't realize that the greatest number of gun deaths in the United States are not accidental. They're not the homicides, but they're suicides. And some of those suicides are teenage suicides. The gun should not be operable for that depressed teenager. And if it were a smart or personalized gun, it wouldn't be operable. The last category of lives that would probably be saved are homicides. There are between 250,000 and 500,000 guns stolen from homes during home burglaries every year. and those guns enter the illicit market, and they end up on the street and are involved in mayhem, including homicides. People often ask, well, exactly how many lives would be saved? And nobody has an answer to that. It's impossible to answer that because we haven't run the experiment yet. We haven't put the guns on the marketplace. But many people, including myself, are confident that the number of lives saved will be enough, that it certainly warrants bringing these guns into the marketplace.
Gun rights advocates seem to be very much against most of these technologies, though. Why is that?
Well, that's a question that has a very, very long answer to it. Some gun rights people are against it because they think that the gun is not going to be reliable. The irony is that the guns that exist now are not reliable. There's a failure rate for guns. Once you put electronics into guns, then guns would actually become more reliable than they are now. So the argument that the gun would not be reliable is a specious argument. We shouldn't put any faith in that kind of argument. Then there are people who say, well, they just don't like any kind of change, and they certainly don't want the government to mandate change. But we're not talking about mandating change. We're talking about letting the market forces do what they normally do, that if guns are on the market that are smarter, safer consumer products and people want to buy it, then the market forces will tell manufacturers that they ought to be changing all of their guns to smart guns over time.
And actually, we saw this happening in New Jersey. New Jersey tried to mandate this with the law that they passed in 2002. That law may have had unintended consequences. What happened? Can you explain that for us?
Yes, I can. I wrote the law, so I'm familiar with it. So yes, so the law was passed in 2002, and what that law said is that as soon as a smart gun is offered for sale anywhere in the United States, and that gun is certified as the law actually calls them personalized gun, it's certified as meeting the statutory definition of personalized guns, and the certification is done by the New Jersey State Attorney General, then over a 3-year period, ultimately the only new handgun that could be sold in New Jersey would be a smart gun. Now, what we've done is, because people are critical of that law, they're worried about it interferes with their rights. So for 2 years in a row, the New Jersey legislature amended that law and said any kind of gun can still be sold, but all licensed gun dealers in New Jersey would have to carry at least one smart gun in their stock of trade, so that if people want to buy the gun, then they can. So the law really is giving people a right of choice to choose a safer gun. That bill was passed twice by both houses of the New Jersey legislature. The first time, Governor Christie didn't sign it, so that was called a pocket veto. And then New Jersey passed it again, and it went to Governor Christie, but that time he vetoed the bill.
Gun rights groups have a point, don't they, though, that smart guns may very well lead to laws that require all guns that are sold to be smart guns?
Well, I can't speculate as to whether they will lead to such laws. I guess I'm seen as one of the biggest proponents of smart guns, but I'm not pushing for all states to have a law that require that every gun be a smart gun. So yes, they are fearful of that, but I don't think that their fear is well-founded. But even if their fear was well-founded, even if all guns were smart guns, or at least all new guns were smart guns, that would reduce a number of gun deaths. It would allow people to have whatever gun they want in their home without worrying that the young child or the depressed teenager is going to pick it up and something terrible happening.
We've talked a little bit that they're not available on the market yet. Why aren't they available yet?
They're not available yet for a number of reasons. The first thing that delayed them coming to the market, and now I'm going back a couple decades, was that the technology had to be better developed, but we've achieved that. That's a hurdle that we've gotten over. Now the hurdles are economics, that it costs money to set up a factory to make a different kind of gun. And then there's also the cultural and political hurdle to get over.
Now, the idea of a childproof gun isn't new. Smith & Wesson manufactured a childproof gun in the late 1800s, and they sold it until well into the 20th century. And then in the early 2000s, Smith & Wesson was actually working on a new childproof gun, but faced a boycott over that. What happened there?
Smith & Wesson and the other manufacturers were being sued by localities and cities and states. They were being sued because the cities and states said, look, you make so many guns, you market them indiscriminately, and as a result, there's chaos on the street, people are getting shot, and that costs the municipality money, just as it costs the municipality money when people would smoke cigarettes and get lung cancer. So Smith & Wesson was hopeful of getting out from under the burden of some of these lawsuits. So they made an agreement that they would change their ways in two manners. One is that they would start to make a childproof gun again. And the second is that they would market their guns differently. And in consideration for that, Smith & Wesson would be dropped as a defendant in some of these lawsuits that had been brought. As soon as that became known to the pro-gun forces, there was a call for a boycott, and the boycott was very, very effective. It brought Smith & Wesson to its financial knees, and Smith & Wesson had to shut down some of its factories because they weren't getting orders for their guns. So ultimately, Smith & Wesson was sold at a bargain price to a different conglomerate. And the lesson that the gun industry learned was that if you break ranks, if you violate what the NRA wants to do, you'll be sorely punished. And that punishment still is vivid enough in the mind of many gun companies that they don't want to break ranks.
So if there is this potential rather large return on investment, as you say, for gun manufacturers, why are more not jumping on that already?
I think there are two reasons that explain their inaction. One is they remember what happened to Smith & Wesson years ago when it got punished by the NRA, and they don't want to be punished themselves. But the second one is that it's going to cost the gun manufacturers, the traditional gun manufacturers in the United States, like Smith & Wesson, Colts, Sturm, Ruger, it's going to cost them some money in research and development to catch up to these other companies that are about to market smart guns now. The position that these major companies have been in is quite enviable from their point of view. They're selling a gun that literally was designed in 1911 by John Browning. It's as though Ford Motor Company were still selling Model T cars without having to invest in coming up with new models every year to improve the product. So the gun companies haven't put any money into research and development, and they're reaping a handsome profit over the last 10 years. What they're going to have to do if they want to move into smart guns is either start putting money into research and development or else licensing the patent rights that others hold so that they can start making smart guns without violating patent rights.
So they're coming onto the market soon. What do you think will happen?
Well, it's hard to predict, but I do think that people will start buying the guns because they'll think, if I'm going to have a gun in the house, I'd rather have a safe gun rather than an unsafe gun. I think that whoever made the first move of bringing those guns to the marketplace is going to have a large return on its investment. And then I think the more traditional gun companies are going to say, we see the writing on the wall, we have to start making and selling smart guns or personalized guns also. And as a result of that, I think we'll see a reduction in the number of gun deaths in the United States.
Stephen Terrett is founding director of the Center for Gun Policy and Research at Johns Hopkins University. Stephen, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for having me.